Oye, is that a better way to start a podcast? I have no clue how to start one. But we're here. Every coach I know in the business has an axe to grind. The bane of every good coach and every trainer. The chiropractor. The MD that talks out of turn. The physical therapist that prescribes useless exercises. We all have it. And part of being a seasoned coach, part of being a coach that has experience, is constantly walking around with the burdensome axe that we have to grind on some medical professional that dropped the ball somewhere else. Well, hopefully this podcast is a way for me to put down my fucking axe, because after 15 years, it's just too damn heavy to carry. And I could go around grinding it as long as I want to, till that hilt is sharp enough to cut through adamantium steel, which is not real. I don't want to. I'd rather focus on the good stuff. I'd rather focus all my ire on changing what I see in the game, in the fitness game, as terrible, and helping you guys get better at being fit, better at being happy, and better at being a conscious member of your own network, conscious members of your own family, friends, and life. That is the only thing that I want to do deep into my training career. For a long time, I've been building a nutrition program. And it's because I went to school in San Jose for nutrition. I studied at the feet of doctors who were all women. And I ate off the plate of many a hardworking dietitian registered with the Dietetics Association of America, and so many scientists and sports nutritionists therein, the great Dr. C, many of you San Joseans know who I'm talking about if you go to the university. And after eating off their plates, I must say, the general public at large and the fitness professionals, there's a huge gap between us. It's wide as hell. And the only way that we can kind of bridge it is to A, dole out positive information, and B, is to deconstruct bad information. Because it's really incumbent upon the people who spread the information about diets, about weight loss, about fitness, to do a better job. And out there today, I don't know that we're all doing as good a job as we can. So part of what I'm going to say is this. Get your shit together. Stop looking for short-term gains. Instead, let's focus on the good. Let's focus on the long-term stuff. One of the most disturbing trends I've ever seen in fitness that I cannot seem to get away from, CrossFit, I'm just kidding, is actually this whole trend of skipping sugars. And how unoriginal is it to have a podcast from a trainer who's a nutrition guy or a nutrition woman, and it's like all about how paleo diets suck. But you know what? I cannot bite my tongue anymore. Way back in 2012 or 13, I was training at a private studio where I spent most of my training life. And I had this lady. Let's call her Jana. Jana came in, and Jana, she had a lot of free time on her hands. Her kids were probably 14, 15, 16, and the good-looking, stunning, neck-breaking Jana, she would come and work out with me 35 pounds. She's like 5'2". She'd come in and we measured her body fat, and that shit was, I believe, 28 to 30. I think it's 29. 29%. You'd never believe it from looking at her. But here she was working out 5 days a week. She went to the gym, the whole nine. And before I continue the story, I'll get to the end of it and come back around. We managed to get her down to, I think, 122 pounds or 123, 19% body fat, which for a 45-year-old woman, pretty damn good. I was very proud of that, but her work ethic was off the charts. Well, that's all well and good, but one of the first things she told me was how much of the evil lionized sugar she was taking out of her diet. Okay. This was probably the first time that I'd heard that people are going to actively get rid of fruit, get rid of the lumps in their coffee in favor of something a little bit more nutritious. And I kind of just said, whatever. With a nutrition degree, with a lot of training, with nutrition education and coaching under my belt, I know this. That's probably not the best way to lose weight or to gain performance. Yet, 5+ years later, it's the de facto answer to anyone who's asked. It's the de facto answer for this question. How the fuck do I lose weight? It is the default response to this. I feel like crap all the time. Someone invariably, unoriginally, comes in with, you got to start eating less sugar. And the next thing I know, people have dropped sugar quicker than the heroin habits, than chasing the dragon. For someone that maybe is entering rehab. Much like that poor analogy. Well, that wasn't the first and only time I'd be encountered with a question like that. But it was the first time that I saw anybody I knew actively taken under. And what did I notice? Maybe you're asking or wondering. Maybe not. But I'm going to explain this. Jana, when she stopped eating sugar, was a capable trainee. She was tough. She's definitely determined. But when she started eating sugar again, when she started eating a more moderate intake, when she started timing her meals, well, that's when she lost the nearly 10% body fat, which I think took, it took a little hiatus, but it took her like about, oh, I don't know, 9 to 14 months. When she started eating sugar again, that's when she started to lose all of her weight. And I would argue it improved her performance and her ability to build muscle. I bet paleo lovers, keto lovers everywhere are already disgusted by the idea that performance suffers when you don't eat sugar. I gotta disagree. And I can probably prove it, or at least put up a strong argument based on science later on. Because in that same gym, probably a year and a half later, I met another lady. Actually, she was the same age. In fact, she looked similar to Jenna. Let's call her Diane. Diane wanted to be a bodybuilder. She wanted to be a fitness competitor. And most of my time was spent arguing with her about when the fuck she should take in some sugar. And of course, the trend is amongst bodybuilders, you guys, you don't eat your sugar, you don't eat your carbs when you're cutting for a show. It's anathema. There's no way in hell you guys are going to take in anything but your protein. And that makes total sense. Now, before I finish up with Diana? Before I finish up with her, let's talk a little bit about keto diets and paleo. This is the idea, and I lump them together because they're the fucking same. And they're the same as Atkins. All right. In the vein of not having an axe to grind, let me just say this empirically. Let me say it with no chip on my shoulder. Let me just get down to the nit. Here's the thing. For the last 40 years, right, it's been well documented that bodybuilders spend their time eating protein by the hundreds of grams, men and women, when it's competition time. And everyone remembers pumping iron, right? They're looking at us ordering all these big meals, and they're like, whoa, where are these guys? They're sitting there somewhere, probably in Santa Monica, and they're eating nothing but protein. There's steak. There's eggs. There isn't a fruit or a veggie in sight. Homeboy's eating hamburger meat. It's fucking pink on the inside. It's nearly raw. He looks like a man, like a gladiator, right? About to go to battle and eating, you know, his fill of protein. Ready for war. And this might be the first time that mainstream America gets a dose of what these huge men, because they were all men in that movie, what these huge men ate. And it was protein. It was eggs. It was meat. It was ground beef. It was hamburger. It was six of them at a time. It was in orders that probably meant 200 to 300 grams of protein, and they did it every day. That's where it started. And the scientific community, maybe they didn't have a clue. Sometime in the early 70s, I believe, Atkins wrote his book. And, well, bodybuilding had become popular by then anyway. I don't think it's a coincidence. I think it's more a linear relationship to the rise of bodybuilding and the advent of the eating pattern that says you can eat brisket for breakfast 6 days a week. You got to remember too that this is around the time that high fructose corn syrup is becoming a staple in American diets. In drinks, in some processed foods, it's a thing. It's also around the time that most food scientists will attribute to the rise in American obesity in orders where 50% of Latin Americans and are obese and 30% of all Americans are obese, and the same 50% of black, more women are obese. It's all in the early 70s. Well, if you know anything about nutrition, you know that there's nothing better than a nice trend to capitalize on. Again, I'm trying to put down my axe, but let's just call it like we see it, right? If I see a knuckleball, I'm going to swing on it. Well, this guy says, get rid of all the sugar. Something that Jack LaLanne, William Duffy, people were saying in the 70s and before that, as a collective fit group, we had already said fuck sugar way back in the 70s. In fact, if you think back to the first time you learned about foods in your first ever nutrition class, indicative of like fruits and vegetables that were dancing or whatever, the message always was get rid of refined sugars. No one ever said that stuff was good for you. Not now, not ever. Well, back then, the mainstream is becoming aware that eating protein is great for you, right? And if you want to look into it further or scientifically, it's because having no carbs in your system, oh, your body goes, hey, let's metabolize fat. And when you do that, you use some amino acids and you start producing ketones. And those ketones are actually the only other thing besides sugars that your brain metabolizes, period. Your brain doesn't metabolize fats. Your brain doesn't metabolize alcohol because it has a barrier. It only metabolizes carbohydrates and ketones, which apparently look pretty much like carbohydrates. So you can live off of just ketones. That is, you can only live off of metabolizing fats. Well, here's the truth about bodybuilding. Those folks, they go hammer when it comes time for bodybuilding season. They'll spend maybe 1 to 2 hours on the Stairmaster or any cardio machine to shred a ton of fat off of their frame. And nothing supports that idea more than taking in as few carbs as possible, because you're eating those replaced carbohydrates and sugars in protein. Sound familiar? I know it does. Because a lot of the paleo diets, even the starter ones, paleo codes and whatnot, well, they're prescribing similar things. Well, how can that be that a modern diet has its roots 40 years ago without mentioning that the bodybuilder way of eating is so similar to what's practiced today? How is that even possible? Well, it's because Atkins wrote that shit first. And what we have now is a separation, right? It seems to me that if you're not athletic, you go to Atkins diets. If you're athletic, you do paleo. And if you're a athlete, you go keto. Truthfully, anything. Even if I just had someone eat only one piece of bread on the hour every hour, but everything else was protein, you'd still go into ketosis. The idea is high fat, high protein ketosis. And I'm talking 50% protein. Because I just had a guy come in to my studio the other day, and a trainer had told him 50% protein. And the guy did lose some weight. He also lost 2 pounds of muscle. His DEXA scan results confirm that. Why is it so bad? Why doesn't this paleo shit, this keto shit, these diets, why don't they work? What is wrong with eating nothing but meat most of the time? Well, there's a few answers. And before I finish them, here's a concept. Every rookie coach, every rookie trainer gets asked the following. If you were on a treadmill for 1 hour, what would you rather do? Would you rather burn 350 calories, but they're all fat calories, or would you rather burn 200 calories of fat and the rest from carbohydrates? Because the process of doing each is completely different. If you want to burn more fat in 1 hour, you keep your cardio low impact. They call it LISS. Yes, there's a fucking name for it. HIT versus LISS. It's called LISS. But what it's really called is low impact cardio. What it's really called is the bodybuilder's sweat march. What it's really called is 2 hours busting your ass on a Stairmaster. You do that in an hour. On average, if you're like 150 pounds, you're going to burn about 350 calories. Oh, you're going to burn a majority of your calories in fat. Up to 90% of the calories you burn, it's going to be all fat. Well, if you go on the treadmill and you run for the same amount of time and you get your heart rate above triple digits or into the triple digits instead of keeping it low, you're going to burn maybe 50% in fat, right? So maybe 200 calories in fat. But you're going to burn more calories. And so the answer is you always, always have your trainees burn more calories than you demand that they burn in fat. Who benefits from burning only fat calories? High-end athletes. That's it. And you're not a high-end athlete. And I can say that because 1% of you probably are, right? Of course, the bodybuilder scene right now is popping off. So that might be a little bit different. There could be a lot more bodybuilders. Some of you guys might be bodybuilding. Some of you might have a show coming up in the next couple months. I think the season kicks off like the beginning of spring. I know they're having expos. Point is, if that's you, then yeah, you need to be doing that slow cardio. You need to be doing that fat shredding shit. And nothing helps you better than intermittent fasting or some type of ketogenic diet. Hey, Coach Johan, it's a lifestyle. Yeah, it's a lifestyle for competitive athletes. Unfortunately, it's not for you. And the reason is this. When you're asked to shred all of the fat off of your body and only have nothing but skin and the finest layer of water beneath that skin and pure big muscle underneath, you can't have any fat showing out of any centimeter in your body. To do that, you have to go hard and you have to do that for weeks at a time. That ain't you. You need to lose 50 pounds this year. You need to get down from 300 pounds to 200 to 150. You need to go from 180 to 172. That's it. You need to build muscle. And this is where these diets fail repeatedly, time and time again. And I've seen it. I've seen them fail over and over. I used to think, right, that one of my problems was I was just too dim. Maybe I'm too married to my ideas. Maybe I'm too closed off and I don't want to see what's in front of me. I just want to be one of these guys that learned everything and says, hey, I know it all already. And so when people used to tell me that they're cutting out sugar, I'd bite my tongue. I wouldn't say much. I wouldn't talk shit. I would put away my axe and wouldn't grind it on them. Instead, I would hope that they prove me wrong by their process. But you know what? It's been 6 years, and while I believe that people do lose weight on these diets, I see far, far, far too many people who come in who have tried the diets and failed in huge numbers. And I don't just mean they failed. I mean that they've either gotten just as heavy or heavier and way more fucking crushed by the experience. Why waste precious time when we don't get it back? And sure, you know, time is kind of a concept, and it's maybe time is something that we build and it's a construct from us, but I'm unwilling to believe that the time you spend going to the gym is wasted. You want to spend it doing all you can to lose weight. So don't waste your time. Don't waste your time skipping sugar. Don't waste your time on keto diets or paleo diets, because you're not going to succeed unless you're extremely strict, and that's people's number one problem. The discipline it takes to stick to it, it's almost impossible to achieve unless you have a competition, unless you've been through the ringer as an athlete for years of your life, and that's only just a small portion of it, period. You guys are cool. I like you. I really like you. We're day one at this point on day two, but that ain't you. I told Diana time and time again to eat carbohydrates. She wouldn't do it. She wanted to live that life. And so she kept skipping out on her sugars. And I would watch her struggle through workouts. And she had muscle and she was a strong girl. There's no question. But I constantly watched her work very hard as my phone goes off. I constantly watch her work very hard to lift things that she should have easily lifted because she was depleted, because she insisted on fasting cardio, because she insisted on waking up and eating no sugar, sometimes nothing, and coming to train. I get it, right? This is the calorimeter, the bomb calorimeter of our bodies. We're now fat burning machines in the morning when we don't feed it, right? And that whole priming the pump thing, it's bullshit. Unfortunately, it isn't. From my own experience, the first time I got to train with a Muay Thai team, I got my ass kicked. I couldn't walk for a day. I got leg kicked into oblivion. But I was determined to make it happen. I was determined to do something I never thought I'd ever do, having grown up play football, which is run longer distances than 100 yards. So I took up running. I would run up in the hills and over here in San Jose in Communication Hill, go up there, run. Over time, I got better. Point is, I tried to do it with fasted cardio. And boy, nothing sucked more than going up into the hills, running a quarter mile above, you know, all the smog down in the valley, than doing this fasted cardio crap. I remember my stomach eating itself as I'm trying to run up the hill. I remember my muscles just burning like shit. I remember feeling sleepier than I've ever felt. And the closer I got to my competition, after trying it a second time, I said, fuck it. I'm going to go back to non-fasted cardio. I'm going to have a little breakfast. I'm going to prime the pump. That's a term that means you need some sugar in your system in order for you to burn fat. I finally explained this to Diane, and before we parted ways, she lost 4 pounds. She finally listened to me. She finally stopped listening to her coach, who was a bodybuilder, not a trainer, who is a winning body, successful bodybuilder, wasn't paying attention to her client who wanted to be one, and she lost 4 pounds, which is actually what she wanted to do. And this is not so much to pat me on the back, but it was my first time thinking, there's something in the fucking water. And whatever it is, it sure as hell ain't sugar. I've had plenty of clients and trainees who stop eating sugar, who cut out, the first thing they cut out is bread, midway through a program with me. And I never, and I don't just mean once, I mean different people with different, I had an Asian girl do this, I had a white girl do this. This is sounding bad as I say it out loud, but I had different background, different demo, a different demography, that's a word, of clients come in, work a program with me, find success, decide that they need to kick it into overdrive, stop eating sugar, and tank the program. And I watch that shit stall. And it happens all the time. And the common ground I find is that they cut out sugar. They stop drinking coffee with sugar in it. They detest bread. And the list goes on and on and on. But what's more impactful to me is like the guilty admission of eating sugar or pasta on the weekend or on their cheat days. Guys, it doesn't matter. Stick to your guns. No one ever in the history of nutrition coaching ever said to eat refined sugar, added sugar. We've been saying that this was crap since day one. This isn't new. But no one ever said that you should be cutting out sugar completely. The only other person that I know that cut out sugar is because she had to. She had an injury, a brain injury. And her doctor prescribed a ketogenic diet because, as I understood it, your neurons are coated with fat, like myelin fat. And in order to rebuild that, you need a high-fat diet. And there are plenty of studies out there that confirm that ketogenic diets are great for rebuilding neuron mechanisms in your body. That ain't you guys. That's a once in a blue moon. That's a one time. Stop skipping sugar, please. Ketosis is fine. Ketosis is for athletes. Ketosis is for your homeboy that wants to lose 6 pounds in 5 weeks to get a six pack before he goes to kick it at Lake Havasu or something. Key Largo, Houston, Atlanta, Vegas, whatever. Keto diets are for your friend that wants to compete in her first CrossFit competition and is reaching all of her PRs, her one rep maxes, and hitting that shit. Otherwise, it's nearly impossible. And in my experience, based on the people that I've met, all of whom are different sizes, builds, and genders, impossible to maintain for any course of time. When you talk about eating keto or paleo, switch it. Your heart rate can't get as high as it needs to for you to burn calories. It will forever stay in that fat burning zone. But when you need to perform, when some coach asks you to start doing 15 reps, start seeing a 20 rep maximum to try and push your limits, you ain't going to be able to get there. When the warm-up is kicking your ass quick, look no further than the fact you skip out constantly on pasta as the reason that your glycogen-deprived musculature can't sustain any course of action above 140 beats per minute for any course of time. When it comes to performance, nothing hurts you more than ketogenic diets. Nothing harms you more than paleo diets. I read a paleo book once. I won't name it right now, Paleo Code, and say that in that book, one of the recommendations for kicking off the diet, and this is by Chris Kresser, one of the most unbelievably despicable things I've ever seen was in this fucking book. It tells people to start off your diet with 70% fats. And the powers that be, the proponents of these diets are going to fund every basic biological study to find out, hey, they're going to confirm all of their beliefs about metabolism. You can always find outliers. And so eating high fat doesn't really contribute to cholesterol. Instead, what it really is actually, guys, is like if you eat a high fat diet, or if all the proof that high fats and high saturated fats give you cholesterol, it's because people who don't know the difference they call it nutrition literacy. It's because they're nutritionally illiterate. So if you're eating like that, it's because you don't know any better. So the rest of your diet's probably crappy. You maybe can't draw proof that high fats give you cholesterol necessarily, but this book, 70% fats in the first, I don't know, few weeks of the diet. Well, I met a guy a few years ago, maybe 2011, who was so heavy, who smoked so many cigarettes, that whenever we would work out together, he would huff and puff. And I thought he was going to die when I was training him the first time. And watching his hands shake violently during workouts, we had to work out for 3 minutes and take like 7-8 minutes off. If he'd picked up that book and started eating this much fat after knowing that his doctor didn't want him to eat, that his doctor told him how high his cholesterol was, how borderline his sugar glucose was. Guess what? Early grave for a 45-year-old man. And this is the type of information, these are the type of books that are readily available. You could just close your eyes, swing your paws at the diet section at Barnes & Noble's and steal one of these books and walk home and be like, okay, I'm going to eat pork belly for breakfast. Let's go. Tripa. Now that stuff is probably not bad for you in any way. I don't know though, but it's delicious. The fact that a guy like that could pick up a book telling him to eat nothing but beef jerky all day, it really makes me mad. Guys, stop avoiding sugar. And if you are going to skip because you just have to try it for yourself, besides knowing that it ain't going to work, know that 50 to 100 is probably as low as you can go safely. And that's because my head trauma trainee, she would eat 50 and 100, between 50 and 100, 25 to 50, sorry. But on days where she'd eat 50, she'd perform a lot better in the gym. So I would say 50 is safe, but stop. Stop skipping sugar. Stop skipping fucking fruit. There are definitely reasons not to eat 10 pieces of fruit per day. And a lot of it does have to do with the insulin spikes that you'll receive and how much fat metabolism you do want to limit in your body. But guys, this has gone on far enough. These diets don't fucking work. When your body is deprived of blood sugar, all it does is create more. And guess where the sources, well, guess what sources it needs to create more? Well, your glycogen's shot, so it can't go in and get your glycogen. Because you haven't been working out hard enough because your heart rate doesn't climb high enough, you haven't been able to deplete the amount of glycogen in your muscles and replete it because you don't eat sugar. So your muscles ain't performing nearly what they could be. And I get the other argument that glycogen holds water, but guess what? Your blood sugar is going to be rebuilt probably from the, let's call it, metabolism of amino acids. Maybe in concert with fats. And those things that should be helping you build muscle and keep it on are now being used to stabilize your blood sugar. That way, your body can go through the processes of your different energy systems and get to where it needs to be, which is the cardio energy system, deep into a 30-minute workout, naturally. By depriving yourself of sugars, you can't do it. And I don't know how many times I've had this very same, very scientific, very textbook empirical fucking convo with people, but that's the truth. And I see it time and time again, from very athletic people to very sedentary people, from people that go and lose 30 pounds and never lose another one after that, from people who are 300 pounds who start in the right direction and then all of a sudden plateau, but never climb back up to the heights that they were, all because we skip sugar. I want to encourage always you guys to do better. Part of taking on any physical challenge is remembering something fucking cliche, and it's this: your path, your journey is really the destination. Yeah. It has everything to do with you enjoying what's in front of you and making the best of it. Because oftentimes we look at what we don't have. We imagine a perfect time only to realize that shit is right now. The perfect time, the time where you can honestly say there's nothing wrong for 95 or something, in the high 90s, is right now. Sure, things might get a lot better in the future. But if we deny ourselves the ability to look around and enjoy what's in front of us, maybe what we think is perfect never happens. And sure, there's no real danger in thinking about the future as somewhere that I can be perfect in. Nothing wrong with that, with imagining shit. But remember, you did that before. You tried that already. How's it working for you? Is today that day? Is it coming around the corner? Is it Valentine's Day? When is that perfect day that you always imagined would happen? Well, the truth is, that shit is right now. All we have to do is enjoy the path that we are on, right? Because if we can kind of open our eyes to the act of getting in shape, of the feeling that you get when you leave the gym, you got all those endorphins. If you can just kind of be sweaty and walk to your car and get something to eat, and that shit feels good to you, you're following your journey. And that moment, the moment that you actually recognize it, that's about as worth it as any high watermark that you can set for yourself. Because truthfully, life is mostly about those watermarks and you're recognizing them. That triumphant day of like bells and whistles and celebrations and some random stranger, you know, giving you a hickey because you hit your fitness goals is never going to happen. Too often we wait for it to happen. Shit never comes. And the only way for it to get to as close to reality is to take a step back or forward, look in the mirror, and understand that it's now. Whatever you did this past week for fitness, whether it's adding sugar back into your diet, whether it's lifting a little bit more, hitting your first pull-ups, whatever, enjoy that shit. And know that what you did is as good as it's going to get, because that means you can still always do better. Well, I mean, what else do I want to talk about is, like, there's a couple things. I mean, I live in San Jose, right? And the rents here are retarded. And by retarded, I mean, with all due respect, ridiculously stupid. Studios are $1,800 out here. I really don't know how many states I'm going to reach with through you guys. Hopefully you guys are scattered out throughout. But I know here in the South Bay, in the capital of the Silicon Valley, man, rents are ridiculous. And I don't think that they can keep it up, right? At some point, there's going to be a high-rise development. That's a bunch of apartments. And whoever developed that shit is going to be sitting on a bunch of empty apartments. And those apartments are going to have to come down in price and join the rest of the world with normal pricing. And it's just kind of a sickening thing to, you know, I remember paying $1,000 a month to live on 3rd Street. Which is, 3rd Street means nothing to you. I lived here in San Jose for $1,000 a month. I think it was 2004, something like that. $1,000 a month. I was punching holes in the walls. I put a speed bag in the fucking drywall and I missed the studs. Went and got drywall anchors and I just screwed the, and I hit the speed bag all the time without even thinking, like, hey, my neighbors would hate this. And they'd, you know, pound on the wall every now and again. And, you know, they were nice couple. And I had some friends over and I had a hookah and, you know, we had kind of a little get together and this young lady decided that, besides taking off her shoes way too early in the night, that she would find a way to kick over my hookah and burn a hole in that carpet. the size of a coal, of a hookah coal, and like 4 inches deep. And I just left that place a mess, and I got most of my deposit back from it. And even the apartment I lived in right after that, too, I got my deposit back and everything. Try doing that shit post-millennial apocalypse out here, right? You're not getting your deposit back, and you're paying fucking, you have to give your blood type, a fingernail, you know, you have to get your DNA tested and get you an apartment, you're pre-qualified. It's a mess. And I can see why developers want to charge so much for an apartment, right? People are willing to pay it. Shit's just supply and demand. If I'm a developer and I have hella money and I know that I'm going to build 12 stories and I'm going to have 60 units and the market is kind of like high, I'm going to shoot for higher. Because in this area, people are making enough money to pay $2,000 for rent. And so, hey, guess how much my place is going to be for? $2,100. And if people are paying it, then it just sucks for the people who grew up here. People who grew up in this area and the areas around here are getting fucked off 100%. The people who built the communities out here are getting kind of jacked. Because unless you're making a deal with your manager, you're not really having a place to move to. So I can see your frustration if you're from this area. Hopefully things level, they're going to level off. The bigger the buildings get out here, the more of them that they build, the evil architects of the New World Order, the more of those buildings that are built in this area, eventually there's not going to be enough bodies coming in from other parts of the country and other countries to put in those places, and the prices will go back down. But we're toying with right now in the South Bay, we're toying with the worst time ever to rent an apartment. Probably in the history of ever to rent an apartment. So keep your heads up if you're trying to get something. Keep your head on a swivel and get some roommates and maybe even wait if possible until you could buy something. That's my advice. Just hearing from people around me that are buying, or myself thinking about how to buy something recently. It's a fucking graveyard out there. It's the book of Revelations out there, right? When you're trying to rent something, it's tough. And I would love to say that there's a way that we can curb it or do something, and unfortunately there isn't. If you grew up here, you're probably not going to be able to rent something in the area. Go make more money. I mean, that's always an option. It's kind of pull your own bootstraps, or whatever people, you know, whatever that saying is, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and do more. And one thing I will say that I love about San Jose is, like, there's a bunch of entrepreneurs out here. And for me, a lot of what we're going forward with is self-started businesses are going to be huge. No better evidence of this than the amount of gyms that have popped up in San Jose in the last 6 years. If you go back even 8 years, there were no fitness boutique. There's one fitness boutique. Now, I mean, God, you can have your pick. Nothing has popped up more than fitness boutiques. So, you know, if you have an idea and you can get a little paper behind that idea, make it crack. Make it happen. Start your dream. Go do it. And pay whoever you borrow your money back. Your money from, pay them back, but make that move. You know, it really is open season for you entrepreneurs out there. As far as, I haven't done anything with new music or anything. I did see the Grammys. I let me rephrase that. I sat with my butt cheeks clenched tighter than I could ever imagine, and stared at the TV showing the Grammys. And I did see Chappelle and heard what he said. I saw a little bit of Kendrick. I heard what Kendrick Lamar said. And I love what that guy's saying. He's really going the extra mile with his expression. And Chappelle, as a comedian, is being very... he's using his platform in a very special way. I want to say something like he's evolved in his practice of his comedy, but it's very encouraging to have a role model, to have a comedian, a black comedian that's a role model for people and is learned and knows what he's saying and using his platform for that. That shit is about as golden as it gets. Other than that, some of the performances were cool. I saw the one with all the ladies up there. Who else? I saw... I couldn't stomach too much of it, though. And the last thing I'll mention today is another tip. Most of the first half of the podcast today was talking about adding sugar, regular eating patterns back into your diet, right? Well, let me just kick this one to you guys also. Protein. Get you 30% protein in your diet. 30% if you're a competitive athlete. If you're a bodybuilder, of course you go higher than that. But if you're not a bodybuilder, don't worry about 40%, 50%, you know, 200, 300 grams. Nah. Get you, I can't imagine if you're 150 pounds, you even need to eat more than that a day. Max, I mean, if you're 200 pounds and you're eating more than that, there's no fucking point. The reason you shouldn't is because at that point, you're sacrificing how many carbohydrates you're eating in a way that you're not going to be able to rebuild glycogen in your body, in a way that your performance is going to suffer if you try to hit gains. So, look for 30% max, and that's if you have a fight coming up. If you're playing, what do we got now? We're in the middle of basketball season, so then maybe you can... so, spring training. If you're starting up spring training and you're starting to get back in the gym, then you're going to go for that 30%, right? And that's 30% of how many calories you're taking in a day. 125 grams. So, keep that the same. And that's if you're having like 2,500 calories. All right, you guys, I'll see you tomorrow. Of course, I won't see you at all because it's a podcast, but I'll be back tomorrow. Yeah. All right. Have a good day. Thanks for listening. Tell someone you like about this. Have them listen to it and download. It's important just to get the word out because, you know, this is just time for me, and it's better if there's more people. Cool. Thank you.